Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to From the Rooker End, a podcast about live following Watford Football Club, brought to you by The Athletic. We are doing this on Sunday because on Saturday, Watford won at home 3-0 against the Blue Noses. Yes, that's Birmingham City. I'm joined this morning by Mike.
Very good morning to you, John.
And Jason.
Good morning.
And, well, let's have a bit of fun talking about the fifth Watford win in a row. Oh, yes, indeedy. It came after a midweek game, where we saw Ismaïla Sarr go off. Your first thoughts, Michael, with Ismaïla Sarr, as the week went on, thinking he's not going to start.
No, it felt the communications that were coming from the club, the updates were sort of suitably woolly, that it felt like he's probably not going to make it against Birmingham, but isn't going to be a long-term doubt. I think if it was a serious injury, they would update accordingly.
So you're thinking, so how are we going to fill in the gap for our finest player this season?
I thought it was going to be easy. I thought they would put Zinchenogle out on the right and bring Gosling in into the space vacated by Zinchenogle in the midfield. Pretty straightforward, I thought it was going to be.
Very straightforward, until we find out that Zinchenogle had picked up an injury and instead Isaac Success started for Watford. I mean, let's not talk about how we felt at the beginning of the game. Let's talk about how we felt after that game. But the big question we had going into this game, after seeing the teams at 2 o'clock, was how are Watford going to be an attacking force? Are we going to have enough of an attacking force? And well, it didn't take long, did it, Jason? 8 minutes for the first goal to go in from King Ken after a knockoff from Isaac Success into the path of João Pedro, who ran at force, did exactly what you're meant to do as a striker. Definitely I was taught when I was 8 years old playing football. Shoot across the goal and the goalkeeper will be at stretch and won't be able to grab hold of it properly, and your partner can come in and score the goal. That's exactly what King Ken did. And, you know, as an attacking force early on, Jason, did you feel like we were missing something?
No, I don't think so, because the biggest worry, I guess, was would we be able to retain that fluidity that we've seen with the front three when we're changing the personnel? And I think the goal was evidence that we didn't lose anything in that fluidity, because you had Success was involved in the goal, so he laid off the pass to Pedro. Pedro, who I think had started on the right, popping up to the left of Success, makes a run, gets his shot away. Ken, who'd started on the left, pops up on the right-hand side. I must admit, I held my celebration because I was worried an offside flag was going to go up, but he timed his follow-up to perfection, like any good striker would do, and pops it in the back of the net. So, yeah, I thought the fluidity that we've seen over the past few games with that front three that I thought may be lacking, particularly with Isaac coming in for his first start, it was still there, and the sort of the players were knitting and interchanging well together.
Mike, do you feel the performance, the attacking performance at least, was fluid? You know, King Ken, we have said that he has had some not, it wasn't imposing himself recently on the games. We've been very, very positive about João Pedro. Did they fit in did Isaac fit in with them for it to be, as you've said on many of the podcasts, every single time Watford attack, you've been saying recently, it feels like we're going to score?
Yeah, I mean, on Isaac Success, there is obviously still a hope that he can do well. He was bought into the club, let's not forget, for 12 million quid. And he's sort of almost been a bit of a jokey figure, hasn't he? We sort of laugh about him, hoping that he can come good. But we don't, with the utmost of respect, no one really takes him super seriously as going to be a functioning striker, do we? But there's obviously a hope there that he hasn't started a league game for, I think, 2 years. And they've thrown him in an important game. So I think there is still hope there. There are embers of hope that he's going to perform. And I think he did all right, certainly in the first half. And I think Jason hit on it well by using the word interchangeable. Because what those front three do, they roam, don't they? They switch sides sometimes. They switch roles. They pop up in different places, keeping the defence on their toes. And you did look sometimes and you think, oh, and Isaac Success is sort of a little bit, probably not where he needs to be in that sort of formation, in that approach. But I thought, largely speaking, he popped up where you'd expect him to and hoped to in the first half. And really, we probably could have been home and hosed. We had some decent ball, decent chances in and around the area. It didn't quite come off. So yeah, first half I was really pleased. I mean, a big part of that success is a big part of Watford's success going forward is Kiko on the right. He just makes so many inroads and makes it so many difficult for the opposition. You know, that overlap we get going on the right with Pedro sort of popping balls off, and the defence don't know if he's going to sort of cut inside with a little turn or lay it off and get inside in the box for a cross. So I think it's just that roaming ability that they have in that final third. And yeah, I thought all things considered, I thought in the first half in particular, I thought he fitted in pretty well.
The important thing that didn't change was the fact that that back four are the same back four that we've had for a while now. They're solid. And also, just in front of them, two very decent midfielders. I don't know if you've, rest of the world has heard of them yet, and hopefully they will do. And really say how amazing...
But hopefully they won't.
Hopefully they won't. Well, hopefully the ones with a bit of money won't. Is Will Hughes and, of course, Nathaniel Chalabar. Now, we've really talked about Will and how he is the most important player for this turnaround and moving him into being a central, deeper player. But Nathaniel is almost my favourite player this year for how far they've come around. You know, but when you were under eights and you used to have player of the season and most improved player of the season. Nathaniel, for me, Mike, has improved dramatically. Mostly that comes down to because what he's adding to this team consistently now is the thing that is impressive the most. What do you put it down to? What is he doing differently now?
Well, clearly it has been put on the front of the programme, I think, which yes. Was absolutely... And I have to say, the programme covers this season have been absolutely magnificent. So hat tip to whoever's designing those at Watford. This one was another stunning front cover. He was suspended after the Bournemouth game, wasn't he? And then so he had a little time to sit back and watch Watford performing really well in his absence. And it feels to me that he's used that time to flick a switch mentally. Now, he was rewarded with the captaincy when he came back into the side, as we spoke about, and performed really well. And it was a colossal performance against Birmingham yesterday. And it feels like he's emotionally improved. The discipline is much better. He's still a bit yappy with the referee, but gone are the sort of pedantic fouls, are the sort of flailing of arms and complaining. He is fully focused on delivering for his team. And the results are spectacular. You know, I've been as critical as anyone of Chalabar over the years, and because we're desperate to see the player that we know is in there. And it feels like, I think I would put it down to him making a decision. I've got an opportunity to help drive this team back into the Premier League, and I want to make sure that I give it everything I've got. And I'm seeing a hugely, hugely changed player and an absolute joy to watch against Birmingham yesterday. He was brilliant.
I also felt that there's a moment, and all this came after the closing of the January transfer window, where maybe in January for the whole of the month, but definitely towards the end of the month, you know, the talk of going to play at top four Leicester would have, you know, given him some sort of diversion. And you worry how long that would last for. The distraction's gone, but maybe he did see, well, if I perform even better, then I can get my next move. Either with Watford to the Premier League, but I could get myself into the Premier League if my performances keep shining. Jason, what was your favourite moment for Nathaniel? Was it the goal, or was it his defending abilities?
The goal was nice, but that's probably not a Nathaniel moment. That was a team moment for me. Just a quick point on that. I love the fact that we had a man short. We drew two Birmingham defenders out of the box because of that, and then stuck it straight into the mixer because it gave us a bit of an advantage, and the ball was put exactly where Chalabar expected to be, one off the training ground. Fantastic stuff. Really, really hard to defend against, so love seeing that. But the key moment was that block in the first half, wasn't it? I think, I mean, I certainly went, I sort of stood up and went, wow, when he made that block. It was a big moment. You talk about, cliche alert, sort of these goal-saving tackles that they're worth a goal themselves. And it probably was, because it would have been a clear-cut chance. We'd have done well to have kept that one out of the net if he hadn't got the block in. And just the speed with which he sort of got down to the ball to block it, very, very impressive. The determination to get there just sums up what you guys have just been sort of saying about him and how he's been playing since the, like I say, since the end of the January transfer window. It's a big, big moment. And I'm pretty sure Watford fans across the county would have been doing the same as I and sort of standing up and applauding that block.
You see, I don't think it was. He didn't put the effort in to that that save, that block. It was instinct. You know, there's no time to think in a moment like that. He just threw himself in the split second, which just shows his heightened awareness. And it's just fantastic when a player is just so focused and just not, you know, just not thinking. I know that sounds ridiculous, but they're going off instinct. It always feels more powerful.
Absolutely, John. And I think that speaks to his heightened level of commitment's the wrong word, because I never question a player's commitment, but just his complete sort of, he's given himself to the cause, hasn't he? And I think that chimes with what you say. But, and just to finish off on that moment, what I absolutely adored about it, A, was that it was going to be a goal, I thought. I was like, you know, you tense, you're ready for the ball to hit the back of the net. And he stopped it. And then he celebrated it. He just stood there and let out a sort of massive roar, both fists sort of clenched, just like, and it summed up not just him, but the whole team over the last couple of weeks. And he celebrated it almost like it was a goal. And that it was just so rewarding to see that he realised what he delivered for his side. And yeah, I really like what you've suggested there, John, as well, that he didn't have to think about it. He didn't have to work extra hard to do it. He just did it. Because he's so in tune, so ready, and so sort of committed. I thought it was a really telling moment, and possibly my moment of the match. It could have, you know, the game could have changed there. If that had ended up in the back of the net, you know, Birmingham throwing those bombs into the box, we could have started to look a little bit nervous. So absolutely huge moment and a huge performance from a key performer. And people have mentioned it on Twitter, and we've alluded to it here. He could have gone in January. He really could have gone. And, you know, what a different landscape it would have been had he done so.
I mean, you were getting worried, Michael, on the WhatsApp group about the bombardment from Birmingham, which I don't think they actually did get a shot on target within the first half. But it was, you know, that did come down to performances like Nathaniel in terms of his defensive play, but also Sierra Alta having another wonderful game where you worry, you know, when you see, you worry about these big championship strikers and what they can do aerially. You know, we know how successful Troy Deeney was, but he dealt with them the entire game. And there was a wonderful interview on the club's YouTube channel on Hive Live Extra, where he's got a translator. But you can just sort of see this fellow who's very focused and very businesslike. And that's the performances we're getting from him, isn't it, Jace?
It is. And yeah, I think you got it exactly right there. You know what you're going to get with Birmingham, playing 4-4-2. They've got big Lukas Jukovic up front. They're going to get the ball out wide, whip those crosses in. He's going to look to put headers in the back of the net. It's how they got their goals against Reading in their win in midweek. So I think Sierra Alta and Trusticog know exactly what they needed to do yesterday. And I think apart from an early cross that I think went over Sierra Alta's head and off Jukovic's shoulder, I don't think he got another sniff with his head after that. And it was, again, it was Sierra Alta. And in fact, I think we should mention Chalobah again here, because he got on his head on a lot of the set pieces that were coming into the box. So it was those two, Chalobah and Sierra Alta, clearing it time and time again and just doing what they needed to do. And again, there's no frills about this stuff. They're just keeping the ball away from our penalty area. It's they're not looking to do anything fancy, anything silly. You look at the stats again, I think, John, you mentioned it, no shots on target in the first half. And I think there was a long range effort in the second half, one shot onto that Backman had to save. And that's because you've got these centre backs just clearing it out, winning the ball, determination, challenging again, time and time again, not giving the strikers a sniff.
what I loved about them as well is Sir Alta loves a battle, and he's not going to get beaten up by anyone. He's just so strong, and the way they sort of stood up to the aerial bombardment, I thought was mightily impressive, because they did have a couple of routines, and certainly in the first half, more those long throw-ins to the box. You're basically defending against a free kick or a corner every time they get a throw-in in our half. So the way they gobbled those up was brilliant. But it's just with Sir Alta in particular, it's just his innate sense of positioning where he needs to be. He can see what sort of attack. You know, yesterday Birmingham were pretty one-dimensional, so it was slightly easier than it will have been against better sides. But his positioning means he gets the ball in a situation where, you know, the left back or the right back doesn't need to be close, because they know that he's going to mop it up and play a ball, or he's going to get it to Trusty Kong, who's going to try and play a ball to a Watford man. I just noticed his positioning. He sort of seemed to assess what the threat was going to be really, really early, and it allowed Watford as a whole just to set, not just to defend, but also then to start moving in the other direction again. And I think you just notice how Messina and then Lazar, when he came on, they don't need to be close to him. I think when you're a defensive unit that's struggling, you tend to sit back and you want to be helping your teammates out and sort of all hands on deck. Not a bit of it yesterday. Those two at the back were just were fierce when they had to be, and then cool, calm and collected when they didn't. I thought it was absolutely imperious from Sir Alta again. It was, and if it wasn't for an absolutely monstrous performance from Chalabar, Sir Alta would have been my man of the match. I thought he was staggeringly good yesterday.
There's true strength of the team really shone when we made substitutions. You know, we've talked about the team in terms of attack wasn't exactly what we wanted. Two key creative players out. How do we cope? Fairly well. But it was the substitutions that really give me the biggest comfort. We saw the substitution of Gosling going off and Sanchez coming on, Mike. Gosling was definitely ready to come off.
He looked tired, didn't he? Which, you know, he's had a knock and he's come back in. But what a signing he's turning out to be. You've talked about, you know, we've had to make changes to that side. And in the last couple of pods, I've sort of said, well, it'd be interesting to see what we're like when it's not our first choice 11. Well, it wasn't our first choice 11 yesterday. But, you know, as you've said, John, I think the theme of this is the strength in depth, and everyone that came in played particularly well. And I think Gosling deserves immense credit for his contribution yesterday. And I think the club deserve immense credit for what evidently is a canny signing. But yeah, he was definitely ready to come off. I think he came over to take a corner routine with Ken Semmer just before that substitution. And he looked like me just after I've travelled gone up the stairs at the away end at Newcastle United. He was a tired boy. Of course, you're taking off Dan Gosling, who's helped get Bournemouth promoted as champions. He's then played an integral part in 5 years in the Premier League for them. So he's got great experience. He showed that yesterday. And on comes Carlos Sanchez, an 88 cap international. He did almost give the ball. He gave the ball away with an errant pass. I think he tried to pass it backwards and it was really, really short. And he basically gave the ball away and Birmingham broke and almost carved an opportunity. So his first touch again was a little bit lacklustre. I think Matt Rouse had made the point on Twitter that virtually every time he's played, his first touch has been a bit dubious. But after that, he hasn't really put a foot wrong at all. And he's just, it goes back to what you were saying about the defensive guys. Cool, calm, doing the sensible things and doing them incredibly well. He puts a foot on it. He looks for a pass, keeps it simple, keeps the ball for Watford. And while we've got the ball, what can the opposition not do? Not a thing. So I just thought it's hugely encouraging that we've got those sort of players to come on. And I feel like, apart from that first touch excluded, I think he's come up to speed pretty well. It helps that he's come into a team in form. But if he sort of, to gum it up is a little bit reductive. That's probably not doing him credit. But he's just a solid, safe pair of hands in the centre there that can just keep the ball, keep it ticking over. And yeah, Gosling for Sanchez was a wonderful sub. But I do want to give credit to Dan Gosling. I think he's been a really clever signing for us, and I think he could play a big part in the running.
There was, of course, the straight swap for Messina and Lazar. But Hungbo got a little bit more time, Jason, just over half an hour. Came on for Isaac's success, which surprised me a little bit. Andre did come on. We'll talk about him in a minute. But Hungbo came on, originally out on the right. But then when the third set of substitutions happened, he was flung over to the left. We're seeing a little bit more of him. We spoke about him with Adam on the midweek podcast. What did you see from him yesterday, Jason?
Yeah, same again. I think you're right. When success came off, perhaps we were expecting to see Gray come on at that point. But having said that, I was pleased to see Hungbo come on to have another run. Obviously 2-0 up, so a bit less pressure on him coming on, give him a bit of freedom to do what he likes to do and run at players. I think he started on the right-hand side. We didn't see so much of him after those first changes. It was really only when he moved to the left that we started to see him get involved. And he had a couple of little runs. And you can see, even at such a relatively young age, part of him has a good football brain, and perhaps there's still bits that need to be developed. So his starting position's really good, holding his run to the right time, which allows him to sort of break past the defensive line and get into good positions, running on so those balls are being put through for him. First one he got, he had a shot when perhaps he could have passed to Andre, to double his tally. And that was probably in his mind then when he made the next run a minute or two later, when he's then tried to get it across to Andre and it didn't quite work. So there's still a little bit of a raw talent there. But what I love is the fact that you've got a player there that he clearly has ability, and he's got the confidence to use that ability. And that should only grow if he gets more game time. Hopefully we can see him develop and become a part of this Watford side, a more established part of this Watford side.
His little cameos have been against Wickham, Forest and Birmingham, three sides that are struggling. So I think we do need to caveat that.
But I'd counter that with his first appearance against Man United in the Cup.
Yeah, absolutely.
When he came on and had a good little run as well, and didn't do himself a disservice there. So I think, yes, I mean, like I said, it's good to come on against when you 2-0 up against weaker sides, but I think it's there.
And I think it continues John's theme, which is absolutely right, that to have someone like Hungbo who can come on and run at a defence, whether it's Man United or Birmingham City, you know, it doesn't matter. If someone's going to come on full of energy and confidence, that is an incredible thing to be able to bring on. And we've talked about, you know, Ben Foster said it, he's the first person to say it, we've got 8 cup finals left, haven't we, which is true now, and everyone's going to have to contribute. And what I absolutely loved from Hungbo yesterday, certainly when he switched to the left, you know, with 85, 88, 89, 90 minutes on the clock, he's driving forward. He's looking to be positive and keep things ticking over. And that can only be a good thing for this side. It just breeds more confidence, doesn't it? That we're, even though the game is done and dusted, 3-0 up against the team who's fighting relegation, who were probably done and dusted half an hour ago, we're still looking to get our foot on their neck and score more goals. And for him to be able to come on it's just really exciting, isn't it? And, you know, he'll face bigger challenges than he did yesterday. But, you know, if the team that we've got can put in a shift for 75 minutes and on comes Joe Hungbo, fresh legs, then that's potentially really, really exciting for us, isn't it? I think it was, I absolutely agree with you. And I would say that the teams he's played against are less of an issue than the positives of how good he's looked, if that makes sense. I think it's important to keep our feet on the ground, but similarly, I think you can only play what's in front of you, and every time he's done it, he's done it really well. So yeah, I'm excited to see what he can do, because he's got a lot to prove, I think, after, you know, he's late in the career for a youngster, if that makes sense. So fingers crossed that trajectory continue.
The genius substitution, and we can say that because it works so quickly, is when Ken Semmer and João Pedro came off. I mean, you didn't do much, lads. Only joking. And on come Ngakia and Andre Gray. And within seconds and their first touches of the ball, the third goal goes in. Now,
38 seconds it was, John. 38
seconds. I mean, it's amazing, you know, that we see Ngakia, and I was getting a bit worried about him in terms of seeing such a bright start this season. You know, when he was on the right and we'd flung over Kiko onto the left when we didn't have Messina, he was showing great promise. It could have been a massive season for him. He has fallen back down that pecking order, but he came on, pushed his way forward, put Andre through, who had, I believe, just the right amount of time. Enough time to set himself, but not enough time to think too much about it. And he slotted the ball perfectly underneath the Birmingham City goalkeeper. Brilliant, Mike, just to see Andre again. Not necessarily because he's starting games at Watford, but he was able to put the ball in the back of the net. And that's the important thing when it comes to goal difference at this point in the season.
Yeah, and you say it's a genius substitution, and it was a clever substitution, I think.
No, it was genius.
All right, let's go with it. Genius.
38 seconds? I mean, come on, it's a chess move.
And just putting Ngakia sort of on that right-hand side in a slightly more advanced position, it just gave a little bit of extra protection over there, didn't it? You know, it was 2-0 at the time, and you know, it's a dangerous score in football, apparently. People keep saying, well, I think Watford being 4-0 up with 2 minutes to go is a dangerous score. So protecting the 2-0, you know, making us a solid over on that right hand side felt like a comforting and sensible move. You know, it's not conceding ground, but it's putting someone over there who's going to do a job. And that was shown straight away. A really, really strong tackle, pinched the ball, lovely ball through for Andre Gray, and absolutely delighted to see. Like you say, John, I think you're absolutely right. It's perfect for a striker. Took it on. Still had plenty to do. Needed a good touch. Needed a good finish. And we got both of those things from him. So, yeah, in it, we're talking about we needed strength in depth. We got stuff from everything. But for a striker, the best thing you can get is a goal. And for Andre Gray to get another one, a really good one to finish off the game, I think was hugely encouraging.
After game, Adam Leventhal, the Athletics correspondent for Watford Football Club, was at the press conference, sent us through the audio of what Cisco had to say. How, with all his injuries, was he feeling about his players? And was the international break coming at the best time?
I have a very good luck with the player, you know, because they give everything 100% for the squad. I'm very happy with everyone. It's 5 wins in a row, and for us it's the first time in our championship, amazing challenge for us. But we can't celebrate today, but we have a big job until the final because we have 8 important games, and it's important every day know what is our process and give all the best in all the situations. I told you, I'm lucky, believe me. I have 24, and no, it's today only I say always. The first day also, I think the same. You know, I have 24 players, and it doesn't matter who play today, come back, Isaac, and I think give a bigger force for the team because it's the first time, and I don't know how many times without play, but he give a bigger force. And after play, Gray, and give another time a score. It's very good when you feel the players stay with 100% with the focus in our challenge. And this is amazing. I think it's very good. It's very good for me. It's very good for the club. It's very good for all the staff. And it's amazing when you work every day with the training ground and you see everyone is trying to give 100% for our team. Give me one day free, please. You know, our championship is very hard. You know, I don't take the emotions. You know, I don't know if it's good. I don't know if it's bad. I think we have a little more time for work because it's important, and don't forget we are building a different ideas. Well, I don't know if it's good or not to stop right now, but also I think they need a little rest because the players give always a bigger force for take the points.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
From the Rookery End, a podcast about life following Watford FC.
Mike's surname is Parkin, and it's been a while, but he has a son called Arlo, and this is our feature, Michael Parkinson.
It gives me great pleasure to welcome once again to Michael Parkinson. It's Arlo. Arlo, how are you doing?
Good.
Yeah, you've got a bit of a cold, haven't you? So thank you very much for battling on and joining us. Luckily, Watford are in a decent shape, probably a little bit better shape than you're in today. But 8 games to go in the season, going for promotion. What or who do you think is going to be most important for Watford as they try and bounce back into the Premier League?
Messina.
Messina, interesting shout. Why do you say Adam Messina?
Not completely sure, but I feel like he's one of the fittest and strongest players we have.
He's certainly turned in some really decent performances. And how are you feeling about Watford as a whole at the moment?
Good, but also Chalobah, because he had a great performance, well, yesterday.
He did, he absolutely did. Arlo, we're going to let you get some rest. Watford are going to do the same. Hopefully we're all back fitter for the run-in. Thanks, mate.
Bye.
We're not going to talk about the games coming up, the run-in. We're going to do that next week on a special international break podcast where we're going to look ahead to the last 8 games. But you can keep involved. There's going to be plenty on The Athletic this next 2 weeks. About England, of course, but all the sports. But Adam's working on lots of content for Watford. You can go and subscribe if you don't do already by going to theathletic.com/rookeryend, where it's currently $3.99 a month, which is half price. And you'll get that for 6 months. And of course, as a subscriber, you'll get every sports story that matters, breaking news and in-depth analysis. And of course, it's ad-free on the website. And of course, all the podcasts that you listen to, if you are a subscriber, are ad-free. Now, on Friday night, Watford played. Yesterday, the under-18s played in the FA Youth Cup. You might have watched it on YouTube. Our mate Colin did. And I caught up with him yesterday to find out what he thought about the under-18s. Colin, on Wednesday's podcast, we talked about young players, talked about Hungbo, we talked about the sons of Pochettino and Bergkamp. For you, though, as a fan, you know, you spent the time watching this youth team on YouTube on a Friday night. But yeah, as a Watford fan of your age, how important is seeing young Watford players thriving?
Oh well, I mean, it's just one of the best parts about being a football fan of a club that you're very much sort of embedded in. Is there's nothing better, I don't think, than seeing some young kid emerge through the academy and coming through, you know, the age groups and in onto the bench of the first team and then getting on. And we've seen that this season. We've seen a couple, actually. We've seen Phillips in the early part of the season. And more recently, we've seen Hungbo come on and give a good account of himself. But on Friday night, and first of all, I'd just like to give credit to the club, actually, because putting this FA Youth Cup game on their YouTube channel is probably not necessarily that straightforward, or maybe it is. But either way, they deserve credit for having made the effort to do it, partly because, of course, the stadium was empty. And it means that the parents and grandparents of these very young players, and this is below the under-23s, this is the under-18s, some of them on the pitch were 15 years old, Lily's age. So for the parents and grandparents, it's a proud moment for them to be playing in this, you know, I think a very prestigious tournament for the young age group.
And a tournament that Watford have won twice under our golden era, I suppose you might call it, of youth football under Tom Whalley. It's very hard to sort of say, you know, we normally talk about the first team in terms of what happened in the last game and how we reflect on that in the next game. You've only watched one game. And as you say, they're very young players. How do you reflect on the game then, Colin? Was it, you know, especially like, you know, did you see the similar style that we're seeing in the first team down there in the under-18s, or was it completely different?
No, it was absolutely the same. And I think that that's one of the great things when a football club is ticking along nicely, as we are at the moment. You see the age groups playing in the same style as the first team. And I don't know whether that's come down from Munoz or whether that's just something they discuss in coaches' meetings. But we set up with a 4-3-3. We had two wide men up front and a centre forward. And then we had three midfielders and a back four. And so we were in a very similar shape to what we've grown used to under Munoz with the first team. And we were to play the same style of football in that we were trying to keep the ball, gain control of possession, and then slowly put the opposition under pressure. Whereas Lincoln who are also flying high in League One and have a great group of youngsters because they really put up a good account of themselves. And I would say probably, just turning off my Watford bias, they probably deserve to go through, I would say. But great thing, and we've seen this again with the first team, is that we went behind, the team stayed calm, managed to get an equaliser, then later in the game gave up another goal, went behind for the second time, 2-1 down, and then in halfway through the second half, able to get the equaliser. A mistake, sadly, from a defender, and a Watford player got onto it and scored a very nice hit and very nice finish into the far side of the goal to make it 2-2. And then there was a rather comical moment because the game had been played at such a tempo. They ran about 85 minutes. There was about seven or eight. One player went down with cramp, and then about seven or eight players all just sat on the grass. And I was thinking, they're not going to ask them to do extra time, surely. They look absolutely exhausted. But they managed all sort of to recover 2-2 at 90 minutes. And yes, they were faced with another half an hour. And in that half an hour, we really, really did impose ourselves. We won a penalty, very soft, I think. The Lincoln players were furious. But, you know, at this level, referee makes up his mind. He's not going to change it. And then Kuka, who's the centre forward, comes up and he absolutely smashes it straight down the middle. In fact, a little bit high for my taste, went into the roof of the net.
He's been practicing with Troy Deeney, that's for sure, I reckon.
Absolutely straight out of the Troy Deeney playbook. And, you know, in a way, we deserved to go through, obviously, because we scored the third goal, but also because we had that... the fitness levels in that extra half an hour, and we had the defensive ability to keep them out. But it was just a really, really good game of youth football, and I personally really enjoyed it.
We're not going to sort of, you know, look at these players and say, oh, who's ready to play in the first team? But you do think about that a little bit. Who was the standout players for you who you think, yeah, maybe you've got the thing that if it continues, you know, you're only under 18 now, if you, you know, develop into the under 23s, that we might see you in a Watford shirt at Vicarage Road playing for the first team?
Well, there was a couple, actually. I thought Ford gave a good account of himself, and Manning, who played in the Ken Semmer role, if you like, wide on the left, I thought he also had some good moments. Sometimes his first touch let him down and his crossing was a bit patchy, but he looks like a player to me. He's big and burly. He's got some upper body strength. He's got some pace. But the player that stood at me in the whole game, really, was Sonny Blue Low Everton. He plays in the number 7 shirt. He plays in the middle of the park. And every time he got the ball, he seemed to be calm. He had a good first touch. It was hard to get the ball off him. And it's that thing you always notice, John, when a player is a good player and the opposition know they're a good player. As soon as he gets the ball, they take a step back instead of a step forward because they don't want to be embarrassed or let him get past them. But of course, when they do that, they give him a bit more time on the ball and he knows how to use it. He can find a pass and he looks a prospect. And I think we've seen him on the bench, haven't we? I think he played in the Tranmere replay last season, or he was certainly on the bench in that game because we remember we had to play on a Tuesday and a Thursday. And I think he may even have been on the bench this season for the first team. So he looks like someone who may, if they continue to work hard, follow the Hung Bo example, if you like, work hard, catch the eye of the coaches and move slowly up, and maybe get a chance on the bench with the first team very soon.
Excellent. You know, we put our podcast out twice a week, but there's another new episode of a Watford podcast out. Hornet Heaven, Colin. Another episode. What kind of episode is this one? It's called Mr. Mainwood. What kind of episode is this? Because Ollie writes them. Sometimes they're funny. Sometimes they're slightly ridiculous, but in a really good, fun way when you're talking about dead Watford fans. And sometimes they really get you in the heart. Which one is this?
I think it's one of the latter, actually, John. It's one that tugs at the heartstrings a little bit and makes you realise that we use... I think the overriding message from the episode is that, you know, as human beings, particularly in this last year under the pandemic and under the restrictions we've had to live by, we need to have coping mechanisms in order to get through things that can be very difficult. And that can be, you know, talking to our friends on Zoom or, you know, following a football club every 3 days. And anything, you know, it could be doing a bit of art or doing something creative or whatever it is, or going for a walk or taking more exercise, something that helps you get through a difficult time. And that is essentially what this episode is about. And it centres around a chap who arrives in Hornet Heaven at the age of 34 and is slightly confused by what he discovers. And it takes him back through his past, and we learn quite a bit about this young man, and it centres around the character of Bill Mainwood. And it's an excellent piece of writing from Ollie, as always. I mean, he never ceases to amaze me. As you say, the variety of stories that he's able to come up with, the variety of styles of writing that he's able to produce. For me, it's just an absolute joy, and it's a gift to be given the scripts to make into audio. So this is another great one, and well done, Ollie.
Yeah, it's out now. Go to your normal podcasting places where you can download Hornet Heaven. And here's a clip from the very, very beginning of the podcast where we start getting to see actually how important a character like Bill Mainwood was to many, many Watford fans.
Look, Dad, the man's got some old programmes.
Shut up and just get in the queue.
But I'd like to...
Do you want a slap? You're lucky to be getting today's programme. Jeez, look at the state of this hut.
Right, next. Oh, hello, young man. Today's programme you're after, is it? Lovely. That'll be 10p. Thank you. Is this your first match by any chance? I can usually tell. Yes, mister. What's your name? Gary Carpenter, mister. Well, you wait there a moment, Gary. I've got something for you. Let's see. Yes, here you are. You can have this. It's a programme from 4 years ago, March 1970. It was only Hull City at home. But do you see that photo on the front? That's Watford scoring against Liverpool. Wow, Watford have played Liverpool in the FA Cup. And we beat them too, 1-0. That's Barry Endine heading the winner. It was a very special day. And from today, you're supporting a very special club.
Come on, Gary. You bought your programme.
Can I keep this, mister? With my compliments.
Come on, Gary.
Ow. Thank you, mister. Mister? My name's Bill Mainwood. Thank you, Mr. Mainwood.
It is the international break. Jason, I set you a challenge to pick a Watford starting 11 of Watford players, when they were Watford players, who were capped internationally. I'll tell you one particular rule. You can only pick one player from each country. So you couldn't have two England players. You couldn't have two Scotland players. Before Jason reads it, Mike, you've seen it. What have you got any things you think you're going to pick him up on?
Yes, I do. One in particular. And it's really on behalf of my mum, who's becoming a regular feature in the podcast in the recent couple of weeks. But yeah, that's a little clue as to
I think
one of
I know
my
where
thoughts.
That's going
to
be then.
Well, let's say, okay, our job, Jason, basically, is to persuade you to change your team. It is your team. It's a good team. But we might have some things change around. So let's go this way. In goal.
There are a few goalies to pick from. There are a few names that may have got in there, or maybe not. Big Pants, Arlauskas, I think they all got capped while they were warming the bench at Watford. Tony Meola. And to be fair, Fozzie had a game for England when he was on loan with Watford. Yeah, but did. I've gone for a player who earned his first two international caps whilst at Watford and is probably one of the greatest international goalkeepers of all time, and that is Northern Ireland's Pat Jennings.
Oh, we met him, didn't we, Mike, at the Northern Ireland Tales from the Vicarage event at the Palace Theatre. He was a footballing statesman, was the feeling I sort of got when we were chatting to him. But I think I know where you're going to be going, Michael, and we might have to have a goalkeeper change to fit in the player you/your mum wants to fit in. Because you're back four, Jason. Let's go from left to right.
On the left-hand side, I've picked a proper hard nutter, because the just to give some context to the whole team, I've picked a team that I feel not necessarily the greatest players in every position, although some are certainly greats. I've picked a team that I think Watford fans will love and take to their heart as well. And this guy is a proper hard nutter, because the rest might need a little bit of support, but we need a bit of passion in there. We need a bit of bloodlust almost. So I've gone for Greece's Jose Holabas.
Very nice. In the middle,
I don't think you could have a better looking centre back pairing than these two,
which is important in international football.
Which might be the reason why Mrs. Parkin doesn't change her mind.
Exactly. And probably why Hollabass is playing out on the left. So first of all, I've gone for a player who I know a lot of Watford fans love. He scored one of the most important Watford goals in history, and that is the United States of America's Jay Demerit. And next to him, well, part of our role on this podcast, John, is to keep not Mrs. Parkin happy, but Michael Parkin happy. I know he will be pleased with the inclusion of Austria's Sebastian Prödl.
Oh, be still, my beating heart.
I could just imagine this press conference where a Watford manager has picked a team and they say, and who's going to play in the centre-back? Well, I consulted with the Parkins and they've said that they are good-looking enough. You know, you've got to pick some legends, Jason, to keep this as a crowd-pleasing sort of 11. Who have you put at right-back?
Yeah, it was a tough decision. There's probably better players out there that could go at right back. For example, Holland's Daryl Janmaat may feel a little bit aggrieved to be missing out here. But I've gone for the legend that is Jamaica's Lloyd Doyley.
Very, very nice.
Yeah, good.
Good. The midfield, I think your wingers almost go without saying. One, you put John Barnes on the left and you put Ismaïla Sarr on the right. Ismaïla is almost like, that's quite easy. Senegal, there's no competition there. But picking John Barnes as your only England player that you allowed, was that a hard pick, Jace?
It was a tough decision because really the competition is between Barnes and Luther up front. But then I sort of thought about my strikers and how they will work with Barnesy, and I'm happy with the combination I've got going.
Yeah.
And like you say, I've gone for a 4-4-2 formation. So we've got Barnesy out and out winger on the left hand side. If you're a traditional old school Mike Bassett 4-4-2, your manager will tell you if you've got an out and out winger on one side, you're going to have a player who can probably tuck in a bit more and sort of drive inwards on the other side. So that's why we've gone for Senegal's Ismaïla Sarr over there.
And in the centre?
We're quite attacking in the wide positions. So centrally, we're a little bit more solid, a little bit more defensive. And I've picked another Watford legend, one club legend in the middle, not just because he's a great midfielder, but also he can play equally well at left back for when Jose Hollabas gets sent off. And that is Wales' Kenny Jacket.
And next to him
is the delightfully underrated from the Premier League era, a player that I always loved. Didn't always get a guaranteed place in the Watford 11, but always a joy to see him on the pitch. And that is Switzerland's Valon Bahrami.
Oh, there's quite a lot of aggression in your team there, Jason, with Hollabass and Bahrami. Out front, we got this Ismaïla Sarr running down the right and John Barnes, the support from the midfield of Jacket and Bahrami. Who's going to be the two men in the box for your Watford capped 11?
Well, again, a sort of 4-4-2. You've gone for a sort of big man, little man combination. And this is where I'm getting really excited about this side. You got Barnesy running down the left, whipping these crosses in. Who else do you want to get on the end of those other than Iceland's Heiðar Helgason? Can you imagine that? See, can you feel how excited I'm getting about that happening? It's amazing.
If that was an actual team, the top goal scorer in the entire league would be Heiðar Helgason, and the first ever player to score every single goal off a header, I suspect. And alongside him?
Okay, so we've got the big man, we need the little man, the little poacher, the guy who's going to mop up all the loose balls in the box, fox in the box. It is, and I've gone for a very good-looking team again, haven't I? You can tell. It is Scotland's Mo Johnston.
Wow. So it's a very interesting team, Jason. I set you the homework. You did it quite quickly, I would say. That was my first surprise. You didn't spend 4 days going, I'm not sure, but no. You went for it and you were committed to it. Mike, where are you? And remember, Mike, you can't, you have to have only one player per nation. So if you want to change a player and it contradicts that, if you're going where I think you're going, and most people who of our age will know where you're going with this, what changes would you be trying to convince Jason to make?
Well, firstly, can I say, Jason, that is a terrific side. Looking at it, it was quite exciting to imagine it in action. So congratulations. If you ever do get to manage if you're put in charge of the best looking World Cup, when that is finally an Olympic sport in 2024, then you'd get my vote. But look, I think there's one There's a couple of people that stand. Well, there's one real name that sticks out for me. He's one of my favourite players as a Watford supporter growing up. He was absolutely my mum's favourite when I was growing up, and unfortunately for my dad, remains her favourite to this day. Absolute Rolls Royce of a defender, incredibly quick, just all round brilliant. No place for John McClelland. It is an absolute outrage.
It was my first thought as well. But he's got Pat Jennings. Who would you put in goal? Do you think by putting Johnny Mack in there, you're going to have a strong enough defence to not necessarily put the great Pat Jennings in goal?
Well, so yeah, Jason did rattle off some of the alternatives, didn't he? And we're not, so you could put Ben Foster in because he'd got, but then you'd lose John Barnes on the left. Arlauskas, I saw him in action a couple of times, so he's nowhere near handsome enough facially or performance wise. This is a bit left field. And he did mention Tony Meola. I like Tony Meola because he also tried out for the New York Jets, and we at Watford love a trier. So someone who sort of plays just like, I'm going to try a bit of American football, I'm going to try a bit of football. So I've got a little bit of a soft spot for him. But what about, I think he got quite a lot of caps for his native team. So he needs to replace Pat Jennings. It's a difficult ask. What about Estonia's Mark Poom?
Jason, this is your team. This is your team, Jason. You get to say, has Mike convinced you to change your goalkeeper to get John McLennan in there?
I can actually say I saw Mark Poom in international action for Estonia at Wembley, and I think they lost 5-0.
All right.
You've not convinced him there, Mike. I don't think you convinced him. I'm going to try. I think Johnny Mack should be there, and I think if we did this in about a week and a half, you'd make it. Because if Daniel Barkman gets his international cap
whilst
a Watford player, I think that'd be a very, very easy choice to make. But at this point, I don't think we can make that change. The one I really want to change is Barami. Not that I don't like Barami. Nielsen.
Yeah.
I'd put him in there instead of that. Can I convince you on that, Jason? He's not quite got the rattiness and the runaroundness in the same way, but a much better playmaker.
I was very close to putting him in, and that was probably the one that I ummed and ahed over most. I just went with, I think in the end, I went with Barami because I had two very attacking players on the wings. I sort of was a bit more conservative in the middle. But yeah, I will give you Nielsen. I'll let you have that one.
Okay, we made at least one choice.
Barami on the bench then, definitely. What about, I thought you might go for Clint Hodges, John. I know you're a big Hodges
Well, no, he's Wales. And the utility man that is Kenny Jackett, not just as being a great player, but where he could also play. I think that's why I can't get rid of, I can't swap him for Gallin. The other one, like you say, the change of the goalkeeper gives you, could we get John McLennan as Northern Ireland as a centre-back? The other one is to put, up front, instead of Mo Johnson, because I'm definitely going to pick Heide Helgeson, is Jerry Armstrong.
Yeah.
That's why we'd also have to change the goalkeeper to maybe put Jerry Armstrong up front with Heide Helgeson. Mike, that'd be pretty good, wouldn't it?
Yeah, they'd be give the defence some nightmares, I'd have thought, wouldn't it? You wouldn't want to come up against those two in their prime. So yeah, very, very interesting shout. It might change the dynamic of this deftly put together side from Jason, but it's certainly worth considering. But of course, the other ones, there's another two more recent strikers that have been overlooked. Odion Ighalo.
Oh, yeah.
And Matty Vidra, of course, who did get international honours. So
they're easy swaps, Jason. They're easy swaps. There's no contradicting of any sort of, two players from the same nation. Can you be convinced to put Odion Ighalo or Matty Vidra into that team?
I'd thought about Vidra, but just didn't think he had quite enough at the top level. Whereas Mo obviously had a great run in the top flight. Ighalo, maybe. I just thought in terms of the quality of the player, I think I like Mo Johnston more. Perhaps the bad boy of Mo Johnston, he's coming back to that aggression again in the side and that sort of determination to win and get the goals for me. And also just a shout out to the Jerry Armstrong one as well. I remember the first World Cup, I remember watching on the telly. I distinctly remember watching the Spain-Northern Ireland game when Jerry Armstrong scored and seeing a Watford player stick the ball in the back of the net to win that was as a young lad, I felt quite proud, but no one's getting rid of Pat Jennings for me, so unlucky.
We've already heard a clip from Hornet Heaven on the podcast, and I had a word with Ollie Wicken. You know, you picked every player you've picked is basically from the 80s onwards, apart from Pat Jennings. There's one player that you probably don't know about, Jason, and I don't know morally if you would ever pick him. And he would mean John Barnes would be out of the team. But from 1891 to 1892, Arthur Tempest, Blackenston Dunn, played for Watford. Now, technically, he was a bit of a ringer. He played two games for Watford, both in the Hearts Cup. But in between those two performances, he played for England. So I don't know if would you allow, Mike, can a ringer go into this?
Well, if it's a FIFA-sanctioned tournament, then absolutely, because anything goes when it comes to them, doesn't it? How did he do for England, though? That's the big question.
Did he dribble past about five Brazilians in Rio to score a wonder goal? If he didn't, then he's not getting in.
Well, going to the Watford archive, 7 days before he making his final appearance for Watford Rovers, he captained England to a 2-0 victory over Wales at Wrexham.
Captain, you see.
Yeah, there's some quality in there.
Wrexham, Rio, similarities.
Okay, maybe he's not going to get rid of John Barnes in what is more of a modern sort of game. But thank you to Ollie for pointing out that sort of little nugget. A man who played two games for Watford and in between captained and won a game for England. Jason, so we're only going to make that one change in the midfield.
I'm going to give you Alan Nielsen. Yeah, I did have him under serious consideration, so I'm more than happy for him to slot in there in place of Valon Bahrami. Sorry, Valon.
I was going to overtake you as a hipster, Jason, try and squeeze in Tamás Priskin up front, maybe get Joel Ekstrand in defence as well, maybe even Danny Shittu in there as well. But you're proving to be a strict taskmaster, and it's a very, very good side. So I'm not even going to try. So sorry to the likes of Mariappa, Nara and Nosworthy. You're not getting in. Jason's he's tough.
Well, the final lineup then for Jason's Watford internationally capped 11, in goal Pat Jennings, back four of Jose Holabas, Jay Demerit, Sebastian Prudel and Lloyd Doyley. In the midfield, it's out wide on the left, John Barnes, Kenny Jackett and Alan Nielsen in the centre, with Ismail Azar on the right, and up front, banging all the goals in, Mo Johnson from Scotland and Iceland's Heiðar Helgason. We'll be back again next weekend. We'll have a podcast out ready for Saturday to fill that Watford gap that you'll have. Talk about the rest of the season and the final eight games and the running Watford have to try and clinch that place back to the Premier League. Thank you very much, Michael.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure. And thank you, Jason.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Do tell your friends. You can find us on social media at Watford Podcast. And of course, download that podcast from wherever you listen to your podcasts. Eight games to go. Come on, you all!
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.